Hey, hey, and welcome to the Meet Me Downstairs podcast. I'm your host, Britt, and I'm super happy to have you today. This podcast is dedicated to honoring the woman within the mother and the woman within ourselves, mother or not. We are talking about the divine feminine, educating ourselves on our body, learning how to love ourselves a little bit better, and meet some really interesting people along the way. So I hope you enjoy. Let's get to it. Oh my gosh, we're back with another episode. I'm very excited for this one because it's my beautiful friend Louise, who I met in Bali doing our yoga teacher training. And Louise lives in London. She just had two beautiful twin boys, and she's going to share her birth story with us. And I'm very excited because it's an unmedicated twin birth, which is kind of incredible and rare. She is such a wonderful human being, and I'm just so excited. So Louise, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Hello.
So we're doing something different this season. We're starting with a couple of like silly, fun, rapid fire questions just to kind of break the ice, get to know you a little bit, and then you can tell us all about your experiences so far with pregnancy and motherhood. So you ready?
I'm ready. Hit me.
All right. So sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise.
Mm-hmm. Poetry books or novels?
Novels.
A favorite guilty pleasure?
Cheer, the Netflix show.
Oh, good one. A feeling that you love to feel?
Devoted.
That's a good one. A feeling that you don't like to feel?
Impatient.
I like these. Current streaming binge.
Ooh, I'm an Audible girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Light on Life, BTS Iyengar.
Oh, of course you would. That's cool. A musician that you love right now.
A bit sad. Eliza Mitchell. It's a children's musician. But I'm listening to all these gorgeous little kids songs on the boys playlist that I created. So
oh cool. Well, I'm gonna look her up.
You should.
Very cool. Okay, two more. One of your favorite things about being a woman.
Oh, my period.
I like that answer. Why your period?
It's so empowering.
Yeah.
I just love it. It's a reminder of the phenomenal capacity of what our bodies can do and do, and that we're constantly at work.
That's true.
Yeah, I find it a very beautiful experience. And don't get me wrong, I'm not someone who's never had period pain or struggled in that department. I very much am, but yeah, I feel like it very much connects me to my womanhood.
I like it. And then the last one is one of your favorite things about being a mum.
Oh, the cuddles.
Yeah.
Snuggly, cuddly moments that you just want to drink in and hold on to forever.
Awesome. Well, thank you. That was it. Very quick. Do you want to give us a quick little introduction of yourself, like what you do, your boys, and then tell us about your birth?
Yeah. So I'm Louise. I'm 32 now, which still blows my mind. I am a full-time yoga teacher in London. I do studio classes, but I've moved into teacher trainings of 200 hours and also yin yoga, which I'm in love with. Mm-hmm. I have just had identical twin boys, which is kind of my new identity in a way, mm-hmm. Coming into motherhood. And yeah, I mean, we're soon to be moving out of London. We've made the decision to go back to nature and live in the countryside and try and grow our own food and just be back in a more natural rhythm of life, really. So that's me. Yeah, I think in terms of my pregnancy and my birth, I did have an unusual experience because, of course, I had twins.
Yes.
So I think in a way that was my real, it's such a blessing in so many ways, but a blessing in terms of me being launched into witnessing the medicalization of birth to the extent that it has been medicalized. And I don't know really, to be honest, about other countries in the same way as I know about the UK, but I do know that it is quite universal actually across kind of developing countries, and especially in the Western world, the UK and the US. I mean, yeah, so my birth story, I believe, starts when I found out that I was having twins and I was told that I would be having a C-section at 36 weeks.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I decided to do as much research as I needed to educate myself so that I was as in the know as the doctors were on the recent science and research, and to listen to my instincts and my kind of inner calling that I was going to give birth naturally, vaginally, physiologically, however you want to say it.
Absolutely. It's quite incredible, truly, like to become aware of, just as you said, how medicalized birth has become, and that you just see that convenience and money for everyone but mums.
Yeah. And it's so disempowering, I find, and just highlights to me even more that we still very much live in this male-dominated patriarchal world.
Yeah.
Because forceps were designed and brought in by men who don't have vaginas.
Obstetrics was brought in by men.
Exactly, yeah. The whole thing. And, you know, I have to be clear when I talk to people that I'm not saying that I don't believe in emergency C-sections when they're absolutely required for the health of the mother and the child, and that I don't think intervention is ever needed, because I know that it is needed. But when you look at the data and the insane numbers of medical births, intervention within birth, inductions, sweeps, I mean, it is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And it's sad because it, I believe, creates a narrative that actually our bodies aren't really capable of birthing on their own. And somehow we are able to go from having tiny little egg and sperm in us that becomes a beautiful baby over a 9-10 month period, and we can do that fine. And yet we can't, for some reason, give birth without help. Yeah. And so I was quite kind of shocked, because I'd never had a pregnancy before. I'd never been kind of in the know about anything to do with birthing preferences, really. So when I was just told that I would be having a C-section at 36 weeks, I asked why. That didn't appeal to me as an option. And I was wondering why that would be given as like the only option on the table. And the answer was just like, well, that's how we do it. And I was like, well, you're not doing it, I'm doing it. What do you mean? And they were just like, you know, in terms of risk, it's the better option, blah, blah, blah. And I asked again, what risks? And they don't know what to say. They don't have clear understanding of whatever these risks are that we're trying to avert by me having major abdominal surgery, perhaps unnecessarily. So I did my own research, and, you know, the guidelines in the UK actually say, and this is, you know, the green paper RCOG, like proper science stuff, I'm not kind of quoting blogs or anything, and they say that there is absolutely no more risk in having a physiological twin birth than there is having a C-section. And actually, C-section carries a lot of its own side effects and risks as well.
Yeah.
And there's a grade of evidence. So grade A evidence is like, yes, we know this for a fact, and we can say it with absolute certainty, this is the situation. the grade of evidence goes down to D, and D is like, actually, we don't know. We just kind of think that this is right. Mm-hmm. So we'll say it, but we don't have the evidence to back it up. And all the evidence, the grade of evidence for C-sections, for twins and C-sections in general that aren't emergency and required in the moment, is grade C. There's no real proper evidence to support the fact that that is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So it just blew my mind. And then I said on my next meeting, oh, I've really looked into it. I've done lots of research. I've read a lot about physiological birth, and I have decided that I would like to have a physiological twin birth, and I would like to just wait until my twins and my body are ready to birth them, so I don't want to book in any kind of induction. And the backlash that I got was absolutely terrifying. It was like, no, for a start, you cannot. And so, you know, being in that position as a woman who's never had a baby before, and these are the professionals, I was like, oh God, why not? And I was in a position where I was kind of feeling like, oh, do I need to give over the power essentially to them because they must know better? Anyway, I had so many meetings throughout. I did so much research. I wrote an essay, a 10-page research paper on why I should be allowed, which is not, yeah, allowed to give birth in the way that nature designed it. And I just kept having these like moments of like, what possible, how did we end up here where I have to fight to actually allow my body to at least try to give birth without intervention? I was literally known across the whole fetal medicine department as this like crazy yogi who thought that she might be able to give birth naturally. And I had obstetric doctors say to me, yeah, we had someone like you once, a yoga teacher. She wanted to give birth naturally too. And of course it all went tits up. I was like, oh, that is so encouraging. Thank you so much.
It's just so many fear-based tactics. And that's even in just like single pregnancies and deliveries, the amount of fear that doctors and nurses and, you know, try to instill. And again, like same way that you sort of prefaced it, like I believe that an obstetrician probably at their core wants the safest option for mom and baby, but it's almost the educating of them has just, it's not been progressive. People aren't. And the thing is, it's like we're progressing to a much more medicinal way, but we need to progress back to instinctual birth as well. We have to kind of peel back these layers of what we've been taught is the right thing to do and come back to what is our body built to do. It's to birth. This is what we've been created to do as women. Like if you just pull it down to the basics, is to have kids.
Exactly. As you say, I had to be in obstetrics, fetal medicine from the start. As soon as they found out that my twins were, well, twins in general, but also mine were identical. And so they shared a placenta, and you know, it does come with added risk. But I kept saying, you know, I don't have a complication. I don't have a problem. I'm just having twins. So can we stop treating this as if there's something wrong already that you guys perhaps need to fix? So, you know, I know that there are women who do have complications and who are very much comforted by being there with the doctors, and that's great. But you know, to be in a situation that I think we're in now where the obstetricians generally think that they genuinely think that they are helping by wanting to do it for us, intervene, make it, you know, easier somehow, or like, I don't know, it felt so sad actually. And then I realized, so I'm really lucky because I kind of come from the standpoint that actually birth can be empowering, because my mom had me, without any intervention. My dad is an acupuncturist, so he gave her acupuncture throughout. I was born in an hour and a half, and my mum has always been an advocate of kind of positivity around birth. And she said, don't expect pain. It's not going to be painful. You just have to ride the waves. You just have to go with the flow. You know what to do, blah, blah, blah. So I did have that already kind of instilled in me. But as I started talking to my friends and people around me about birth, they were like, oh God, are you so scared? Like, I can't believe you've got two. How are you going to do this? Like, oh my God. And I started to really understand how our perception of birth is like traumatized. You know, the way that people portray birth in movies and just kind of even, you know, I'm a huge fan of Friends, but you look at Rachel's birth and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why are you portraying this as a birth? I mean, it was a birth, of course, and I know that some people have to give birth on their back with their legs in stirrups for whatever reason, but that, like you said at the beginning, is a convenience thing so the doctor can see well.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't make any sense for the female body. So anyway, I started to get more and more kind of outraged and passionate. But I also started to really find that it's just such a difficult thing. If you're having a C-section, or if you've had a C-section, or if you've had a birth that's had lots of intervention, for some reason, it's okay for you to be like, oh, why are you having a natural birth? That's crazy. Like, you should be having a C-section, like all this stuff. But if you're on the other side, you can't say, why are you having a C-section? Why are you having intervention? Because there's like something really taboo about that, as if, you know, we can't actually stand up and say birth can be quite an incredible, empowering experience, and you can do it as a woman without intervention. But because maybe we're going to offend someone else who had a C-section. And so I found myself really kind of sort of stuck in this place of feeling really passionate about empowering myself and other women to know that you can probably give birth in a way that makes you feel so empowered rather than disempowered, but not feeling like I was actually socially able to say that. So it's been a really interesting journey. I think the other thing that I found amazing was people's total disconnection or disassociation from what was coming in their birth, you know. And I saw someone talking about it the other day, and they were saying, you get engaged to be married, and then you spend a whole year working so hard on this amazing day that's going to be coming up that, you know, you can't wait for. And then you find out you're pregnant, and you just kind of sit back and you're like, okay, well, the doctors will help me if I need it, but I'll just sort of just wait and see what happens. And that was not the approach that I took at all. I was like, all in, you know, reading about it. I was doing daily visualizations of my birth that was going to be painless and amazing. And yes, it's idealistic, but actually I spent so long focusing on this birth that was entirely painless and totally transformational that that's what I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it despite a whole load of logistical crap as well. So I did visualizations, affirmations, breathing, yoga, research. I did a lot of stuff to prepare. And I honestly think that if I hadn't done that, I would have 100% ended up with at least an instrumental birth, if not a C-section.
And it's like, there's this fine line of, well, yes, okay, so we were meant to do this, so we'll just do it. Like, I don't need to worry about it. Or like you said, but I'm going to be doing it in a hospital, like it's going to be fine. But there has to be a layer of preparation and education, because we haven't been taught this. We aren't taught it in school or in physical education or anything like that, just as we aren't taught about our periods or any of the other major things and components in being a woman. So, and it just continues to override into birth. And like that's a huge reason that I ended up becoming a doula, is just because I'm like, how is this happening? If the world was progressing and birth was maintained as this quote unquote natural experience, then maybe we wouldn't have to prepare in such a way. But so many women are having really negative birth experiences, really traumatic birth experiences. C-sections are an all-time high. And I'm pro-choice. Like, if you want to go and do this, do this, but prepare for it. Like, educate yourself on what a cesarean is like, make an informed decision, do all of those things. But we are missing that drive to want to understand our body, to want to understand what it's like to bring another human being into the world in the system that is currently built for us.
And I mean, as you say, I also believe that if you choose that, that's absolutely fine. You then own that experience, yes, whatever that experience is. And I just found that I was being almost like coerced. It didn't feel like horrible until, you know, I became a bit outspoken. But it was just this kind of like, oh, that's just what you do, you know, that's just how it goes, that's how it works. And I felt like I have to be so strong and I have to trust myself so hard because I have all of these people saying to me, medical professionals, do you realize that, you know, you could be putting your babies at risk by making these decisions? Yeah, it's so hard because for a lot of people and moments for me as well, that gets under your skin because, yep, of course your babies are the most important thing to you, but you can't be manipulated in that way. Mm-hmm. So I did find that I was quite angry at the system, really.
Yeah.
But as you said before, it's not that those medical professionals are like, let's disempower these women, let's make sure that they have a terrible birth. It's not that, it's just become ingrained. And it's like they think that actually we can't really do it because of the level of intervention that has had to start happening. But if you start with, oh, let's book you in for a sweep or an induction because you're 40 plus two, you've just interrupted the process that's happening inside of your body, and your body is perhaps affronted or kind of traumatized by whatever kind of induction you've had, maybe. And I'm not saying this in all cases, and I know there are reasons to do it, but it seems from the people I talk to that they just did it because they were told to.
Well, yeah, it's like 40 weeks. Oh, we better induce. It's like, what are you talking about?
When you start to understand the whole cascade of intervention, it makes total sense that people end up with emergency C-sections, yeah, or these long, long labors or epidurals that they didn't want or any of this stuff. And it's just, it hurts me when I speak to another woman who's just had to recover from an emergency C-section after a 70-hour long labor or something. You know, I'm like, and I try and ask them, how did your birth start? Was it a spontaneous thing? What happened? And nearly every single time it's like, well, I got booked in for an induction, mm-hmm, and then X, Y, and Z. And
I'm like, yeah. And there's usually no questioning. It's like, and this is also not to say that there's anything wrong with women who go down this route, you know, of like, well, the doctor said I had to be induced, so I just did it. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's more like, okay, how can we help women to feel empowered to question their medical professionals? Yeah. So, okay, we need to induce you just like you did. Well, why? What is the reasoning?
Just ask why.
Just asking why. And the response is usually telling enough. If a doctor is like, they don't know the answer to that question, or they're immediately like, well, because I said so and I'm the doctor, or they get angry, like all of these things are flags, red flags to be like, maybe this isn't the person for me. Just asking.
Yeah. And this is, you know, just how sensitive it is as a topic, mm-hmm, isn't it? Because you're not trying to demonize anyone,
no,
not even the person who sat there and said to me, like, if you make this decision, you're going to hurt your baby. You know, that person probably thought in that moment that they were doing their job and that, yeah, they needed to let me know that. So it's not about saying you're in the wrong and I'm, yeah, right and every woman should have a natural birth. You know, it's not that. It's like, we need to be empowered to know that it's our body. It's our baby and it's our birth. And so we need a say.
Yes.
And the number of times that people are like, oh, they won't let me. No, I can't do that. I'm not allowed.
Yeah.
You're not allowed. What, who says, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what really got to me. So I became my own kind of cheerleader.
Good for you.
And my husband was so supportive as well. You know, he could easily have been kind of scared into saying like, oh, no, you should just do what they say. But he really trusted me. And I know that I do come from a movement background as well. So I have a lot of experience like being embodied. So I do know how to kind of tune in and listen, if you know what I mean. So that definitely was an added bonus, but you can learn those things during your pregnancy. I really, I was lucky to have the support of my husband, and it wasn't easy by any means. There would be days where I would question myself because I couldn't find another woman who had given birth to their twins, identical twins, naturally in the birth center, which is what I wanted. I couldn't find one. I mean, there were some people on Instagram that I saw along the way and kind of messaged, but they were somewhere else, random in the world, and not like in my kind of social circle. Yeah, so I felt quite alone, and I did feel like maybe I'm just too wedded to the idea of a vaginal birth. I don't know. But every single day that I would journal and visualize and do my affirmations, I mean, I went to quite extremes. I recorded myself. I wrote down my birth story, like the ideal birth story. And then I recorded myself saying it. And then every time I went for my morning walk, I just listened to myself recounting my birth story and how I found it to be so beautiful and phenomenal and fascinating, and all of these words that you don't normally associate with birth, let alone twin birth. So ultimately I became kind of a bit obsessive about it, but I felt like I had to in order to protect it in a way. I kind of felt like I was fighting for my birth. And of course I knew that if I did come up against a problem or a complication and I could feel my body and myself knowing that I needed support and help, I was always going to take that. Mm-hmm. I was never going to say like, no, I'm doing this on my own regardless. It wasn't that at all. It was a kind of like, I'm going to try because I believe that I can, and if I need support and help, I'm absolutely going to take it.
Amazing. But you know, I think if you don't put it out there, then it's just not out there. But if you put it out there and you record it or whatever it is that you do, but you have these affirmations and you do these visualizations, who's to say it doesn't affect the outcome? At least it's in the universe somewhere than just in your mind.
And I'm such an advocate of that. I believe in quantum physics but I know of course that it's not foolproof, and I just choose to feel into the experience as if it was already done.
Yeah,
so that's what I did. And to be honest, I have in my diary, in my journal, many times before I got pregnant, I want to have twins.
Interesting.
It's there, it's written down many a time. Wow. Yeah. And then when I did become pregnant, before I found out it was twins, I was writing, you know, it's so incredible that there's a baby in me. And every time I wrote something like that, something in me was like, babies, babies. And I was like, honey, to my husband, I think we're having twins. And he was going, Lou, we are not having twins. Of course, we're not having twins. The chances are so low, blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah. Like, okay, well, I think we are. Anyway, I went for my scan and they were like, oh, there's two.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm not saying that I necessarily manifested my twins, but I am saying the more that you focus on something and the more that you feel it as if it's real, yeah, I think you're kind of bringing it power.
Yeah, but also I think it is evidence to support that we are more connected to our bodies than we realize. So even that like little inkling, I think there might be two in there without knowing it. It's just this like sort of, I don't know if it's divinity or whatever it is, but there's something there that we don't always have access to, but sometimes we do. And it just is.
And I believe an uninterrupted birthing experience can be a moment where you really feel and understand and are connected to yourself like never before. I mean, I meditate and I do yoga, but I've never felt that connected to myself ever. It was every single cell of my body was in it, was alive, was busy, was, you know, there with me. And I feel genuinely privileged to have had that experience, because I know that a lot of women don't get to have that if they wanted it, you know, and that makes me sad. That's why I feel quite passionate about it, because it gets kind of taken away from a lot of people because they just didn't know.
Yeah.
To say no to an induction. They didn't know that that a simple sweep could be the reason why they ended up with whatever. So yeah, it's hard to talk about.
But important. But
important, yeah. So anyway, I ended up having an 8-hour spontaneous labor. I had no interventions. I gave birth on all fours. They were half an hour apart from one another. And it was quite incredible. And, you know, I have people be like, so wait, you didn't have gas in it?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
No, I just didn't. And it's not like I was desperate for it and was sort of thinking, no, I won't have it because I've decided not to have any interventions. It wasn't that at all. It was literally like I was so consumed by the experience that there wasn't even a moment where I thought, oh God, give me something. I just didn't have, and even my doula actually said to me, like, oh, you'll have a moment where you kind of move into the pushing phase where you're like, no, I can't do it. I'm leaving. Don't make me do this. And although I very much felt the kind of energetic shift into the sort of down energy mm-hmm. phase, I didn't feel that way. I kind of just felt like, oh, this is it. I just need to basically allow it. I'm just going to sort of be here to experience, but know that this is actually much bigger than me. I'm not in control necessarily. It's just my body doing what it does. It knows. How crazy that it knows.
Amazing. So talk us through like building this team. Like you had a doula where like you were able to find somewhere that would allow you to have a vaginal birth of your twins. So like, yeah, tell us how that came about and like what the experience was like as you were actually in labor.
Yeah, so I found my doula through a recommendation. She'd worked with twins before, and she just really, you know, as doulas do, they advocate for you. So she wasn't saying, oh, you should really have a natural birth or you should do X, Y, Z at all. But once she knew that that was my preference, she was right behind me, you know, with all the evidence that I needed and all this kind of stuff. And so that was really helpful. But other than that, it was really just me and my husband and my babies. I spent a lot of time with my hospital, which was Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, curating this birth plan, and it was going to be the first ever twin birth in the birth centre. But I went into spontaneous labour at 35+3, so I was quite early. And it started with just a very abrupt waters breaking moment as I was lying in bed at about 11:45 at night. And I knew, you know, that I'd had moments where I've been like, oh, maybe my waters are broken before, but this was like, oh no, now my waters are broken. So we turned on the lights and there was blood clots in my waters, not like a mucus plug, but definitely blood clots. So the plan had been to stay at home and labour at home until I felt like I needed to go in, because it was really, really close to hospital. But we thought, you know, this is a bit unusual. My doula was like, oh, I'm not sure about that. So we decided to just go in, see what was going on, and then if everything was fine, come home.
Quick little promo break here. We've got an amazing childbirth education course that we want to share with you. It's called Birth with Power, and it's been created to do just that, to empower you to birth in your own way, to feel prepared, educated, understanding of your body, the systems that you choose to birth in, the options that are available to you as well, whether it be methods of pain medication, interventions, alternate methods of birth, all of this so that you can truly have a positive and empowering birth experience, no matter the outcome. We chat through breastfeeding, the pelvic floor, different ways that your partner can be of service, and of course, postpartum and matrescence. Listeners of this podcast get an amazing 50% discount with the code MMD50 in all caps. So head over to meetmedownstairs.com and get it going. Birth is meant to be connected and empowered, and now is your chance to have that, whether it's your first or your fifth baby. So MMD50 for Meet Me Downstairs. Head over and enjoy this wonderful, wonderful course.
So we got to the hospital and, you know, you get sent to triage, and we were in there for a little while, and they did the checks and everything was fine. So I was like, okay, cool, I'm going, thanks. And they were like, no, you're not going anywhere. I was like, yeah, I'm going because I want to labor at home in my own environment. This is all a bit like clinical for me. So see you later. They were like, okay, you're 35 weeks, you're having identical twins, please don't go home. And I explained again, you know, I'm free to go, I'm gonna go, mm-hmm. I'll see you later. And the woman was like, okay, if I can find you a private room with a birthing pool and promise you that you are on no time clock, no one's gonna come in, no one's gonna do anything until we ask you, but we just know you're here, would you consider that? I was like, yeah, I would consider that, seems reasonable, means I don't have to travel back and forth, like, okay. So she went off and it was an hour of her like just not being there, at which point I was like, see, I could have been at home all this time just mm-hmm. relaxing. Anyway, she came back and she was like, oh, you can't give birth here.
What?
So I was like, what? And she said, because you're 35 weeks, we have to have two beds available in the neonatal intensive care unit, and we don't have those, so we'll have to transfer you. And I was like, right, this is problematic, because I do have the senior midwife and the senior obstetric doctor in this hospital who know me literally by name and by pregnancy, and I am worried about being transferred. She was like, don't worry, there are hospitals really close to us here, and we will do a proper transfer and they will understand the position you're in and blah blah blah. At which point also I was like contracting now and wanting to be at home, so I said, okay, we have to be transferred. Then she comes back a little while later again and was like, oh, there are no beds available in any of the surrounding hospitals here. I was like, okay. She actually came back and she goes, little spanner in the works.
Oh god.
Feels like quite a big spanner to me. Anyway, they ended up needing to send me to a hospital that was 45 minutes away in some random hospital that I'd never heard of in my life, that was really, really far away from my house. So they were like, that's the only place that we can get you into right now, so we're going to transfer you there. And we'll send you in an ambulance now. So my gut instinct was, if I get into an ambulance and arrive at a hospital as an unknown woman with 35 week twins, I'm going to be treated immediately like an emergency. And in terms of my physiological self at the time, my body was still very relaxed and feeling fine. And I just was not willing to go anywhere in an ambulance. So I said, okay, this is a situation, we have to be transferred. to minimize the stress as much as possible, we're just going to go home. I'm going to have a bath. We're going to relax. And then when we feel like the time is right, my husband will drive me to the hospital. So you just do the transfer and we'll do that. And obviously that was met with a lot of resistance, but we had made that decision and that's what we did. So we came home and immediately it felt so much more relaxing to be at home. I got in a lovely bath. I was genuinely, weirdly, so relaxed considering I had just been randomly transferred to some random hospital. I was like, I've got pictures on my phone, just kind of like taking pictures of the last moments of my pregnant body and carrying the babies inside of me and stuff. Anyway, I got in the bath and I was just there, like on my own. My husband was trying to have a little nap and I felt so good. I felt like totally connected to my body. My breath was, I didn't even have to try and do like special breathing. It was just kind of doing it. Mm-hmm. And after about 15 minutes, I was like, okay, my contractions are so close together. I honestly think that had I had a home birth, I would have given birth within a couple of hours of that.
Right.
It was so amazing. And clearly I was feeling very safe and relaxed and able to just progress. I don't like that word actually, but move forward. And so I said to my husband, you know what, because we're going into the unknown, I think we should go. So we got ready to go and I'd planned that any car time that I had to have, I would have my eye mask on so I didn't have bright lights in my face. I'd be listening to incredibly calming music. It was every prayer for me. We just had to get a new car because we have obviously two new children. And it had a seat warmer, which was game changing.
Oh,
so I was in this warm, cocooned little space for a good half an hour. Luckily, the drive was a little bit less because it was in the middle of the night. So we got in the car, we arrived at this random hospital called Northwick Park and got out and they were like, who are you?
Oh no.
And I said, well, I've just been transferred here from Chelsea and Westminster because they couldn't house me there, so now I'm here feeling a little bit like, you know, there's no room at the inn vibes.
Oh my gosh.
And they said, well, no, we were expecting someone who was having twins in an ambulance who never came, so you can't be here, you can't give birth here, you're not registered with us. I was like, okay, take a deep breath, relax, everything's gonna be okay.
But how are these hospitals just turning away someone?
I know. Well, that was the other thing, and I said to my husband Alex afterwards, like, I almost feel like I should have put on that I was in pain or that I was freaking out or something, because I think I came across as if I wasn't in labor yet or something.
Right,
they
right.
They weren't taking me seriously at all. Anyway, we said, like, actually, we're in quite established labor over here, so I'm not going anywhere and you're going to have to register me now. Meanwhile, I was in reception with, like, people coming in and out, bright lights on, totally the opposite of getting into a place where you can really produce a lot of oxytocin and start to really dilate. But I was so committed to protecting myself and my birth that I never took my eye mask off. I didn't see anyone in there. I just spoke. Wow. Every time someone came and spoke to me while I was having a contraction, I just put my hand in their face, apparently, and just stopped them straight away from talking to me because I just couldn't handle that level of distraction. So anyway, we demanded that we were given at least somewhere a little bit more private because they wouldn't give us a room until they'd done the full registration process. So they gave me like a little, honestly tiny triage room, but without any staff or anything. So we were in there while they did this registration for 2 hours, at which point by the time the doctor actually came, I was 8 centimeters. Because the labor was happening kind of whether I liked it or not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just had to accept all of this total disruption to what had been planned. But the whole time I was actually having an amazing physical experience and I said to my husband in the car, like, I really do actually feel like I'm riding waves. Mm-hmm. And it made me think of you as this amazing surfer, you know, actually just surfing. I was like, yeah, this is great. I'm doing it. Because after every contraction was this wonderful rest time. So I would just rest. So anyway, eventually we got given a room in the labor ward, and it was cold and massive and just totally unwelcoming. And so I went into the bathroom with the lights off and just stayed there. But it was only half an hour after we were actually given a room and anyone actually acknowledged me until babies were born. So I was in this room, and this midwife was there, and she was just the opposite of what you want, you know, constantly trying to talk to me, like asking me to take my eye mask off and like engage. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, no. So I asked her to leave the room, because, and I'm actually not someone who's normally able to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of my life bending to whatever needed to happen because I didn't want to offend someone or because I was too worried about the other person's emotions or whatever. But during my birth, I just became so sassy, and I literally said, can you please leave the room? And she didn't leave the room. So I turned to my husband and I was like, I really don't like her. Can you make her leave?
Oh my gosh, but good for you.
I mean, I am a bit embarrassed. I do feel sorry for her now, but like she was genuinely disrupting my flow.
Yeah.
So I needed her to leave. Anyway, she went outside, and so it was just us in there. Just, and this was the opposite of what I'd been told would happen with my kind of pregnancy and birth. Like I was told there'd be people everywhere, like you couldn't get a moment to get people to leave you alone. No one. We were completely alone, to the point where I called Alex into the bathroom about 20 minutes later, and I was like, I think he's coming. And I was like, can you just check? And so he looked, and he was like, oh my god, I can see his nose and his eye. I can see his nose and his eye.
What, really?
Yeah. And there was no one there. It was just
us.
So but still, I wasn't making noise. I was breathing. So I was focused so much on my breathing. And I had this quote in my head from a woman called the Naked Doula.
Yeah, she's and she said,
floppy face, floppy fanny.
Yep, yeah.
So I was breathing in, like big breath, and I was exhaling and going and trying to like relax my face a lot. So you couldn't hear anything from the room, apparently. It was very, very quiet. And so when my husband went out and said to this midwife, oh, we need you back in the room because my wife's giving birth now, she was like, no, she doesn't want me in there.
Oh my god.
He was like, okay, we need you in there, let's go. Anyway, she came in and she was like, oh, okay, yeah, you need me in it. So then everyone came into the room. Again, I didn't see anyone. I had not taken my eye mask off. I was like, I'd gone over to the bed and got onto the bed on all fours. I had my forearms down, actually, and had my knees in and my heels out because I'd learned about the shape of the pelvis and everything. Mm-hmm. And also, I actually did feel very intuitive to do that. So all these people were coming in, and then this woman, this obstetric doctor, came in. And this was, I'd been told about experiences of women giving birth having this kind of thing, and I'd almost been like, surely not. But anyway, she walks in, she comes within like centimeters of my face, the witch is down in the bed, and she goes, Louise. And I was like, what is going on? Why is someone shouting at me right now? So I lifted up my head and I said, yes. Meanwhile, you know, I'm crowning. She's like, you do realize that you might have to have a C-section.
Oh my God.
I was like, pardon me? What? She's like, you need to say that you are okay with that. I was like, okay. And then she goes, and you know, you might have to have an instrumental delivery. And I was like, look, if there's something wrong, I will do what I need to do, but please leave me alone. Go away. This is my moment of giving birth to my children. I don't want to be talking to you.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got her to leave, which was essential. And then this midwife called Susan came in and she said, I'm not doing anything. I'm just here. If you need me, I'm here. And that was it. That's all she said. And then apparently she just sat there. And so that was enough to make me just like kind of trust. Like it was like an immediate trust between me and this midwife. Mm-hmm. And I'd never even seen her face.
Wow.
And then that was it. They just came. And I had declined continuous fetal monitoring, you know, where they strap mm-hmm. the heart monitors around you, because I really wanted to be able to move and breathe, and they strap them tight. So I was having intermittent monitoring. So there were people kind of with their hands, like trying to get the monitors onto the babies to make sure they were fine. And that was the most kind of intervention that I had, you know, people listening to their heartbeats. And then they came, and it was just the most amazing experience of my life.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I feel like what a testament to your power.
It was insane what was required to stay calm during that.
But also what was required in order for your body to do what it's naturally meant to do.
That's what blew my mind the whole time.
Yeah.
There was just nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't understand. I was like, you guys are treating me as if I have like a very complex condition over here. I don't have anything wrong. So anyway, I was incredibly proud of myself and my body and my husband and my babies, you know, for just being brave, I guess, because when you are in that situation, it would be very possible to just go, okay, I don't know what's going on. I'm in an unknown place, like do what you need to do kind of thing.
The main experience, or the main like takeaway from my experience, was that I had to almost like fight for my birth, and that meant that I had to be probably more confident than I actually felt, or come across more confident than I actually felt, in order to make that happen. So I guess, like, if you are someone who thinks, yeah, I would love to try physiological birth, and that's the kind of avenue that you want to go down, there may be obstacles that come up along the way, but I really believe that knowledge is power, and by knowing a little bit about the birthing process, and you know, oxytocin release and all this kind of thing, you can really trust in your body and trust yourself and your baby. And for a lot of people, it can actually be a really beautiful experience. And that's what I had.
It's just preparing yourself. The more that you know, the more you can advocate for yourself, and the better the experience that you can have. So yeah, learn about birth, learn about bodies. Like, for anybody listening, you know, ultimately the choice is yours at the end of the day. And it's more, if you can just make informed decisions, then I think you can just cover off anything that arises. Like if it's a cesarean that's unplanned that comes up, but you have been informed along the way, you've made this choice consensually, and you're like moving into it, I think it takes away a lot of those feelings of like grief for the birth that you wanted to have, or any of those little things that come up. You know, it kind of just allows you to be more accepting of the experience no matter what happens.
And I believe that, you know, cesareans are absolutely incredible when they're needed, and also when they're wanted.
Yeah.
And that is, for me, like, that will never be in question. I think the main thing that I learned was that sometimes the help that you're offered leads to a situation that you really wanted to avoid.
Completely.
And actually, yeah, if you can have enough information, or if you can have spoken to enough people or listened to podcasts or whatever, to help you realize that actually you can say, not yet, thank you. Or let me just try.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Totally. So, okay. So your boys have arrived, and what does then those like first few days, weeks, kind of like in this postpartum very raw motherhood time look like?
I mean, I have to say that before becoming a mother, I think universally, you can't really know what it is truly like until it's happened, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I
was so lucky with my pregnancy. I didn't have complications and I had this really quite amazing birth. But straight after my birth, both of my boys had immature lungs because they were born premature and not very premature, like 4 weeks, but you know, enough for that to be the case. And they both had to go into neonatal intensive care for 10 days. And being a NICU or NICU mother is just heart-wrenching. I mean, you know, you've carried your babies, you've birthed your babies, and then they get taken away from you. And so that natural instinct to nurture and hold and feed, it is just, you can't do it. So you obviously sit by the cots the whole time, but it's very upsetting to have your baby that feels like a part of you, or your babies in my case, like taken away, even though you know that that's what they need and that they're in the right environment for them. It's just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I was experiencing the post-birth experience of, you know, what happens after you've literally given birth, whether that's C-section or vaginal. It's just, it's really hard. And I've never thought of wearing a humongous nappy before. Yeah. And I ended up wearing them for weeks.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how raw it would be, to be honest. Yeah. I kind of saw, I don't know if I just had the impression that it was like this beautiful bubble of just loving your baby and just sleeping with your baby. It was not that for me. And I don't think that the bond with my boys was affected by the fact that they were away from me, because I was sort of next to them the whole time. But I do think that it was, it made it more difficult in a way to bring them home. Because I got used to them being constantly observed by professionals and nurses and doctors, and them just like being there by my side the whole time.
Yeah.
And then, thank God, the boys got better and we took them home after 10 days. And suddenly I was like, okay,
now what happens?
And I had genuinely, I think I had, because I enjoyed pregnancy so much and I read so much, especially about birth and everything, I think I had slightly sort of blindsided myself from recognizing that then I would actually have two babies at the same time to look after, even one baby, you know, it's just, whoa. And I also think I slightly glorified breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
I had pre-birthing the babies, I had found this like beautiful Picasso sketch of a mother, very like maternal woman, quite voluptuous, cradling her baby in her arms and breastfeeding, and it was just the most beautiful image, right? And I'm literally sitting next to this framed print in my house with both of my babies, like trying to breastfeed, crying at my breasts, my milk pouring everywhere, cracked nipples, being like, this isn't what I thought it was gonna be. So yeah. And then for me, because I have two, I had to really get my head around the fact that I didn't actually have enough milk for both of them. Well, people say, you know, you always have enough milk, and it's supply and demand. So you keep feeding, you make more, you keep feeding, you make more. I was breastfeeding for 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I still had, oh my God, it's so intense. And my babies were still grumbling. They were still hungry. I knew they were still hungry. And I'd also, and I put my hands up, I can 100% say I was guilty of being a little bit too purist, I think, and just thinking, oh, it's perfect. You just have this natural birth and then you have a baby and you just breastfeed your baby for like years and years. Actually, I needed formula and I still breastfeed now and they're 5.5 months, but I also have top up bottles of formula milk. And I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful for that because it means that my babies are satisfied and it just is what I need and it's what they need. And so there's been a lot of learnings, that's for sure.
It's, yeah, there's so many, like, as you said, like glorifications that we place on motherhood. And I think a lot of that is as a result perhaps of like birth and this, you know, this world becoming a bit medicalized and things like proper information isn't really passed down to us like it would have been when you're living in community. And now it's like all you're seeing is movies or stories or things like that where you have the baby, you give birth to the baby and then you come home and it's like happily ever after. And then you're like, wait, but what about the exhaustion, the depression, the hormones, the breastfeeding, like all of these things that come up and you're like, you feel a bit like, fuck, is this just me? Like, am I the only person experiencing this? And you feel like something's wrong with you or like whatever. There's just so much that happens in those. I mean, I honestly feel like now is 2.5 years in, I am only now feeling more at peace with my role in motherhood. And it's just like just starting. I know that it's going to change and maybe I'm just in like a good phase because I feel like things just come in phases, but it's for the first time that I felt like, okay, I feel more comfortable in this arena now.
And I think it's so important to have these conversations, you know, because hearing you talk about that, and you're 2.5 years in, I'm only 5 months in and I have so many days where I'm like, I can't do this. I don't know what to do now. And sometimes, you know, if both of the babies are unsettled or they're both crying and it's just me, and I will just leave them in the room for a second, go outside and just kind of like weep. And semi like collapse into myself and just be like, oh my god, this is too much, and then go back in the room and think, okay, it's gonna be okay. But what I feel like is a kind of repercussion of wondering if we're doing this wrong, or like, are other people feeling like this, or what's happening to me hormonally, mentally, is this idea that we have to have a facade of like, everything's okay, I'm doing fine, like, you know. So I and I'm not saying all mums necessarily have like a big struggle, but I would find it hard to believe that you would just ease into it after birth and feed, you know, it's a lot, and you're not sleeping, right?
For no, it's
most people, you're not sleeping. So I think the honesty, and I get, it's not necessarily dishonesty, but the ability to be open and share the truth of the experience is something that I believe to be really important and something that I don't think happens enough. And actually, Instagram, for all its faults, in this case, I found really, really a comfort because people seem to be more able to share honestly about the struggles of postpartum and to say, look, I love my baby, there's no question about the fact that I want to do my best by my baby, but actually what is happening to me right now, where have I gone?
I completely agree, because when I first like started this podcast, that was really the driving force of starting it, is because I was like, I can't be alone, like there has to be people that are willing to like chat about this stuff. And in the 2.5 years that I've been doing this, I have watched the sort of like transparency within motherhood start to kind of open up. And like you said, people are sharing more on social media. There's more podcast conversations. Like I think it's becoming a bit more normalized to talk about the harder parts of it. So I do agree with you in the sense that that is a positive of social media, is that you can connect with somebody from on the other side of the world that you've never met, who shares a post of them having a really shit day, and you on the other side also having a shit day, being like, thank the fucking Lord that
yeah,
I am not alone.
It's not just me.
It's not
and
just
that's
me.
That's the other thing. I see people mostly when I go for a walk or I planned to meet them. So those days I make sure that I have showered and mm-hmm. that I'm wearing clean clothes. But yeah. for a lot of the time I am in pajamas, I'm covered in sick.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely a complete, you know, mess, mm-hmm. but not a mess. I'm just a mom. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, when people see me out, they go, oh, you look great, you don't even look tired, oh my god, what are you talking about, you're fine. And I'm like, oh god, maybe I should occasionally just go out like yeah. I look at home most of the time, to just be like, this is actually the situation.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
I mean, god, I think it's a really fascinating conversation because it's so multi, like, faceted. You're in love with your baby, but you're also maybe struggling to bond with your baby.
Yeah.
And you love who you are as a mother, but you also feel completely lost in yourself in terms of who you were before. And you feel exhilarated one moment and the next minute you feel depressed. And yeah. I just think it's such a roller coaster.
Completely.
And to be on that roller coaster and feel as if you're maybe alone or like this isn't happening to other people, I think is the most dangerous part of that, because the roller coaster is the natural part. The being behind closed doors with your baby by yourself is the unnatural part. And when we didn't live like we do now, you know, I guess the whole community would just support you. And
yes.
and we are lacking that and missing that. So yeah, the Instagram, even though it's a weird space, it does provide that sense of, I guess, what's
community.
Community.
So how are you feeling now, 5 months in? I mean, that's still really fresh. And with two kids, I mean, I know you have nothing to compare that to as well. For me with one, I'm like, oh, I can't imagine, but I know this is your normal. But what is it like, you know, kind of in this 5 month zone?
I would say that every time I think I'm in a rhythm, something changes.
Yeah.
Their behavior changes, their sleep changes, the breastfeeding pattern changes, something changes. So I think the key thing that I've really tried to lean into is just surrender,
mm-hmm.
to just allow every day to be that day without thinking, okay, I've nailed this. This is great. This is what we do now. Because if something worked for me yesterday, I can guarantee it does not work for me today. That's just not the way it works with them for some reason. So I'm in a place where I feel like the way to cope and the way to be happy is to just be in the present moment and recognize that I'm not in complete control, and that's okay. Yes. I think I do for myself, because there's two of them, I have like a kind of loose structure where I try and have specific times for specific things. When that falls apart, that's okay, it falls apart. The other thing that I find at this point is it has taken a long time for my body to start recovering. I was very large because I had two babies, but it wasn't until about a month ago that I even felt ready to even sit on my yoga mat. And I'm a yoga teacher. So that was really, really hard for me. I felt like I'd lost a huge part of myself, but that I just was not ready. And if I did try, it just made me more sad because it was just not there. And I felt a bit lost. So I'm starting to recognize my body again. Not that she'll ever be what she was before, because I'm a kind of new woman.
Yes.
I'm still breastfeeding and I'm very much a kind of cuddly mummy right now. Yeah. And it's taken me a long time to get comfortable with that as well, to be honest. I yeah, it's just it's been a huge learning journey. I think I'm in a pretty good place right now.
Yeah, today.
But if but if you ask me tomorrow, who knows?
The joys of motherhood. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for just sharing that, just being so open and like about everything, because that's what this is for. And I'm so appreciative of the women that come on and share their time and their stories, because that's, I think, what helps this community to continue to grow. And even though we're like a small piece of the pie, it's still a valuable piece of the pie. And there are, you know, so much that comes from these conversations. Even if it's just for me, I'm like, praise to everybody, you know.
No, for sure.
But yeah, so if there's anything else that you want to share before we close off, or let people know what you have going on. I know you're in this mum bubble or where to find you, but like anything you want to let us know.
I think I say this to myself a lot. My husband says this to me a lot as well. It's just be so kind to yourself. You have just undergone the most amount. You grew a human. Right?
Sometimes three.
Yeah. And you grew an organ or two to look after those children. Then you brought those children into the world, and now you are caring for them. I mean, it's huge. It's so huge. And sometimes I don't think that the recognition is enough.
Thank you for your time. And I will make sure to put your information so that people can follow you and see what you got going on and just be a part of the wonderful Louise's life.
Oh, it was so good talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening in. As always, if you enjoyed, leave us a review. It really supports our channel and it helps it to grow and let other people who might be interested in this stuff find us. And then also please just share it, subscribe, love it, whatever it is that you guys do to keep supporting. We appreciate it so much, and we will chat on the next episode.